You're listening to County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. This is the second episode in a two-part special featuring conversations about county budgeting and finance concerns. Dave Lucas, NYSEC's Director of Finance and Intergovernmental Affairs, is joined by Stephen Morgan, Onondaga County's Chief Fiscal Officer. They will discuss what challenges the county is facing right now in their budget as a result of the pandemic and an unfolding economic recession, and what they are anticipating for 2021 and beyond. They will also detail the steps that Onondaga County is taking to address the current crisis.
Today, we're talking with Steve Morgan. He's the Chief Fiscal Officer in Onondaga County. Can you tell us a little bit about your time in public service, especially with county government?
Sure. So I have a little over 26 years in public service, all with the County of Onondaga. I started in the County Comptroller's Office as an auditor right out of college, actually, and have worked my way through the county, starting as an auditor, moving to the Social Services Department as an accounting supervisor, and then as an administrator in DSS for years. The last little over 8 years now, I've been the CFO for the county. So I've seen a lot as an auditor. It exposed me to a majority of the operations in the county. It gave me a good foundation for understanding how the county works, both from a fiscal perspective and an operational perspective, and then cut my teeth actually, working as an accounting supervisor of the biggest department and probably the most complex department from a financial perspective. As an administrator in DSS over fiscal policy and now as the CFO. It's given me quite a bit of background and breadth of experience as we enter the challenging times we're in. So
I can see how that DSS background is going to be very helpful for you in your current position.
Absolutely.
So we're interviewing a couple different counties here. Can you tell us a little bit about your county, what it looks like demographically and the form of government and other things?
Sure. So, the population here, we're in the pretty much the center of the state. Onondaga County is, has about, approximately 460,000 residents. Our big economic drivers in this region are what we refer to as in meds. So, I'm sure everyone's, familiar with Syracuse University, but not only do we have SU, but there's Upstate Medical University, Le Moyne College, OCC. So we have quite a few educational institutions as well as medical institutions. Again, Upstate Hospital, Krause, St. Joe's. It really drives the economy here locally and employs, a majority of the residents in the county. It's a stable form of business and continues to grow and support the tax base. In terms of the form of government, we have an executive form of government, so there's a county executive and a county legislature. There's 17 county legislators that represent the different districts in the county. Obviously, with a executive form of government, the executive is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the county. So that's how we're structured. The county's budget is just about $1.3 billion. We employ about 3,000 employees. As a little point of information that I think is relevant, when I started in the county in 1994, I believe we had about 4,500 county employees. So you could see over 26 years, we've reduced the county workforce significantly through various means and measures. And, you know, one of the biggest things, you know, more recently was the sale of the county's nursing home, which had about 500 plus employees. So that's about where we stand in terms of employees at this point.
Great. I just wanted to point out, too, for our listeners, you've got a lot of tourists or big venue attractions there, too. I mean, you have Destiny USA. Believe it or not, my daughter, who goes to school here in Saratoga, did a class trip to Destiny USA for the Wonderworks, the ropes course there. You've got mm-hmm. a great zoo. You've got the state fairgrounds. You got St. Joseph's Health Amphitheater. That's a lot of big venues and events that really got derailed in the pandemic. So, you know, as the pandemic unfolded in your role as a chief fiscal officer, you know, what were your first thoughts when it became apparent that this public health emergency was morphing into a fiscal crisis of unknown length and severity?
Well, my first thought was, you know, we need to develop a plan that's going to allow the county to continue to provide, you know, the service, the vital services that we provide to our constituents with, you know, an unknown amount of reduced resources. You know, that was my first thought. And it started even, you know, before. I mean, I think initially, you know, obviously the first and foremost, we're all concerned about the, you know, the health of our community. But almost immediately, we all knew that it was going to turn into a fiscal issue, you know, even if it was going to be only a temporary shutdown at first. We just knew that, and that was the first thing we went to was, you know, we need to develop a fiscal plan that's going to allow us to continue to operate and provide those, you know, the services that our constituents expect, you know, with reduced resources. And, you know, that plan obviously continues to be modified and it continues to morph. And it will continue to change and be updated and tweaked with the changing circumstances, whether it's, you know, the fact of whether we're going to get federal stimulus or not and direct aid to counties, or if the state's going to get assistance, and if they're not, are they going to push down the, you know, the cuts the governor has talked about, and at what level are those going to be at? So as these circumstances continue to change and as the picture becomes clearer, you know, our plan continues to change. And we're trying to be nimble and flexible and be able to manage the situation and still operate. So that was what, you know, first came to my mind as soon as we went into this, you know, kind of pandemic shutdown mode.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty around the current situation as Congress is kind of on the sidelines for maybe potentially another month and maybe until after the election. It's really hard to anticipate what you have to do. And we're 8 months into the calendar year for the fiscal year for the county, so it is extremely challenging. So could you provide some examples of some immediate steps you took that you think might provide long-term fiscal benefits as you go into 2021?
Sure. You know, and they're not novel ideas, and I think most of our, you know, our colleagues across the state and our counties have probably employed similar steps and initiatives. But we immediately put in a hiring freeze. You know, I think since March we may have hired 10 people, 12 people maybe. You know, with an employee base of 3,000. You know, that's not a lot, and a lot of them have been in the health world to assist with contact tracing and that type of work. So we have over or close to 500 vacant positions at this point. Some of those were positions that were new that we just never got around to filling in 2020, And a good amount of them are actually positions that have been vacated that that we just haven't backfilled. And along with that hiring freeze, the county executive proposed and implemented a retirement incentive. So those folks that were eligible for that incentive had to be at least 55 years old and have 5 years of service. So as you know, we can't offer early retirement incentive. Only the state can do that. So what we offered was a $5,000 lump sum payment, along with a lock-in of retiree health care at the current cost that retirees pay. We were able to get 160 or so individuals that agreed to take that incentive. And you know, again, that's been added to those vacant positions. We've allowed a staging of that retirement incentive where as you become eligible for that incentive, you have to leave by the end of that month. So a good amount of the 160 were already eligible and left at the end of June, but we will have a number of people continue to take that incentive and retire throughout the remainder of the year. And again, 160 folks, if we keep a majority of those positions open, obviously that will go a long ways in helping us balance our budget for this year. You know, personnel, people, that's our most expensive resource, and that's where we have the most control, and I'll get to that later in some of the other discussion here. In regards to how we do that, but it's certainly our biggest expense, and it's what we can control the most, and that's where we go when we know we're heading into a fiscal crisis. Along with that, we put forward and implemented austerity measures in non-personnel accounts, trying to lock up accounts where there's some discretion. That's equated to, probably about $20 million or so in terms of locking up different funds. We actually officially went into, our accounting system and not to get too technical, but actually put in encumbrances, pre-encumbrances to actually take away the budget in those accounts. So it's not even available for departments to access. So we actually went in and entered entries to do that. So, those actions together have cut spending or avoided spending as we go forward to about $35 million for the year. It's still not enough based on our projections and our modeling around sales tax and potential state aid cuts. But there may be more action to take when we get some finality on federal help and or if there's going to be state aid cuts.
So it sounds like a lot of workforce issues has kind of been a center point initially here. The requirement to stop the spread of the virus was reducing density everywhere, whether it was a local business or even in your county office building. So you had to switch quickly over to remote workplaces and other initiatives to reduce that density in your own buildings. Do you think there's some opportunities presented themselves for future county operations where you might keep some of the remote work model or something you may use in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've added some staff back into the main building here. The Civic Center is where most of the county operations here in downtown Syracuse are operated out of. We, for a long time, were at about 30% of the workforce was on site, with the remainder being off site. And we specifically in the area of social services have identified the ability to have a majority of our staff work off-site. And a lot of that is a result of the structure we had already put in place years ago if we went towards to a task-based system as opposed to a system where an employee would carry a specific caseload and be responsible for a certain number of cases, specific cases, and they were responsible for A to Z on all the work related to that case. We shifted years ago to a task-based system because we found a lot of efficiencies could be had with that model, and it really has allowed us to embrace this remote work concept, where a lot of the work we do in the temporary assistance and food stamp and Medicaid arena can be done via a call center that we have. A lot of folks that need, questions answered or need to submit documents or need, some action taken on their case, it can be done remotely. It can be done via the phone. And then we have, we have the technology, the phone system to do that on site, as well as the proper technology and applications to handle that sort of work structure and maintain cases and recertify cases. So we're in the process of looking to invest in additional technology, mainly around a phone system that would allow our folks to remain home and be able to be in a queue from their home phone and take calls as if they're sitting in the Civic Center here on site and do their job from home. A lot of the work is handled in that world via that call center, and then there's tasks that are pushed out via our technology that we have that are pushed out to various people. Again, those tasks can be almost exclusively performed at home. So, we may continue to operate DSS with 300 or so employees working from home. And a lot of that is possible because of the structure we put in place years ago and how we process that work.
Do you anticipate that could lead to less office space need for you in the future? I don't know if you lease space or own most of your space, but I could see that could have an impact.
Yeah, we own most of our space. Over the years, as we've reduced staffing, as I discussed, we've moved operations that are that were external back into our main building here. So we're not paying for, except in I think some rare cases, I think in the WIC program we're required to have multiple sites, but for the most part, we were able to move folks back in to the Civic Center, which obviously reduces the costs associated with leasing external space. My office particularly here, we operate, the budget function as well as we went years ago to a centralized financial operations concept where our various departments no longer have fiscal infrastructure within them. We have a financial operations division that operates under me that handles all the finances for our departments. A lot of that work, we use an ERP system. A lot of that work can be done remotely. So a lot of my staff in finance and budget are home. And there's no reason why they can't continue to be home. We're able to monitor their work and ensure that, the work product's being produced and deadlines are being met. And going back to the DSS example, we have a very transparent process in terms of being able to monitor the work that's being produced. So you can measure that. And, I think that's one of the bigger concerns about remote work is, are folks being productive? And, in these cases, we have the ability to measure that, and it's transparent. So, it works. If you want to have the ability and the benefit of working from your home, you need to continue to produce. And we're even seeing the potential of efficiencies gained by folks staying home and maybe even reducing headcount as a result.
We'll be right back to the discussion after this brief message. To ensure we continue fulfilling our mission to represent, educate, advocate for, and serve New York's counties, we are embarking on NYSEC's first ever fully virtual conference. Join us in September as we provide the high-quality training and panels that you expect from a NYSEC conference. The virtual fall seminar will be held over 8 days with webinar workshops that you can register for at nysec.org/fall-seminar. Best of all, this event is entirely free to our members. While we may not be able to meet in person, we'll still be moving forward together.
We've touched on this a little bit. You kind of mentioned, you know, the uncertainty of potential state budget cuts. And I think for our listeners that are not county officials, it's important to differentiate about state aid versus state reimbursement. And for counties, when the state reduces reimbursement to us, that's not an expense we can offset locally because it's a mandated program we have to fund and sometimes administer on behalf of the state. You know, given that knowledge, what portion of your county budget do you think is dedicated to paying for state mandates?
Well, you know, the way we define that is we look at, you know, we look at mandates as a percentage of our local dollars. And what we consider to be local dollars are our share of sales tax and our property taxes. So, you know, if you take those two revenue sources together, again, that's what we can consider to be local dollars. We estimate our mandate to be about 40% of all the sales tax and property taxes that we collect, or about $175 million or so. So obviously, you know, consume a large portion of the sales tax we collect and the property taxes we collect. So significant. And, you know, to touch on what you mentioned regarding, you know, our inability to reduce expenses, even when the state reduces reimbursement, for the programs, that certainly is an accurate statement. You know, if they, like they did years ago, shift the sharing formula with safety net to require the counties to pay a higher share, there's really not a lot you can do from that perspective. But we always have the ability, and we've always, in this county, continue to look at ways to provide and administer these programs as efficiently as possible. You know, the state doesn't mandate how many people and how many employees you're required to operate and administer a program. So we, you know, that's where we go time and time again, you know, to try and see if we can become more efficient and reduce the resources it takes to administer the program, you know, with the reality that there's, you know, there's state requirements for determining eligibility. There's timetables and deadlines, and we understand that. You know, and as we're in this world and as we move forward, you know, and I know it's an item, you know, that we may cover further in this podcast is, you know, what are counties going to do if those cuts become permanent going forward? Are, you know, are counties going to say, you know what, we can't afford to continue to staff running these mandated programs and administering them at the levels we're at? You know, are we going to have to reduce the staffing that administers those programs? And then what does that mean? Does that mean that it may take longer for, you know, eligibility to be determined and ultimately benefits to be pushed out the door? I don't know. Those are discussions that, you know, are ongoing that we continue to have.
Yeah, and that point, and you raised it earlier about the cost shift and the safety net program that happened. It really happened during the Great Recession, during the last big downturn. And every one of those cuts that they implemented back then, they were small. It was like you pay 3% more of this program. But when the programs are billions of dollars, it really added up to a lot of money. And those cuts on an annualized basis from the Great Recession approached $400 million that the counties had to absorb forever going forward. And now on top of that, the governor's talking about potential cuts of 20% or more, which would be another $600 million that we estimate that counties would have to absorb. That really changes the dynamic of what the county can do. And I think you've talked a little bit about that, but could you elaborate a little bit more on if these cuts became permanent? I mean, what does that mean for Onondaga County?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, what it means is you're going to have to stop doing certain things, you know, and as I talked about, we're under mandate. You know, I don't know if people really understand what that means, but we're under mandate to provide, you know, these, you know, in most cases, it's social and human services. And, you know, by law, we have to provide these services. And as you know, there's, you know, for all of them, there's timetables and when you have to determine eligibility and make a decision. So there's really no ability to reduce resources. We have to operate those programs, you know. And I think for years, counties have said, okay, if we're going to be responsible for operating this program and we're responsible for not only paying for a portion of the admin, an ever-increasing portion of the admin. I don't think the state pays for any admin anymore for these programs. They walked away from that years ago. The reimbursement for the programs themselves shift, it becomes increasingly difficult, and you have to look at areas of discretionary spending in county budgets. And unfortunately, that ends up being in the areas that your average taxpayer covets and expects for their tax dollar. It's parks. We have a great park system here in the county. It's public safety, which is, you know, obviously of utmost importance, especially recently, and roads. People want, safe roads and reliable roads, and not only the structure of the roads, but, you know, obviously we're upstate New York. We get a lot of snow here, and plowing the roads. So, you know, those are discretionary areas. I mean, in the public safety arena, you know, we have to run a jail, but we don't have to have road patrol. But is that really, you know, an area that we're willing to go to and look at? Those aren't easy decisions. So, you know, if we continue to get squeezed and that aid continues to reduce, we're going to be left with very bad choices and very bad options. I've been around, 26-plus years, and, we've continued to manage the county always from the mindset of we want to provide the best service we can at the lowest cost possible. And I think, you know, over the years I've been here, we've done that. I mean, it's case in point is the number of employees we have compared to what we had 25 years ago. You know, there's not a company that, at least around here, that I know of that can boast the reduction in staffing that we've had and still providing the services we provide. But that's certainly going to be threatened as we go forward. If there's no federal, at least, you know, short-term federal help, and certainly if the state makes these cuts and makes them permanent going into the future, it's just something's going to have to give.
Yeah, you highlighted a lot of very difficult choices there. It kind of begs the question, and I know you're still in the throes of putting your 2021 budget together, and I'm not sure where you are in that process, but I'm sure budgeting, from my experience in budgeting, is you're always budgeting this year, last year, and the next year. So you're always working on some piece of it. It almost, from my perspective, sounds like it's everything is on the table potentially going forward. And including there, and I know this is, you don't know for sure, but would you be considering additional borrowing or increasing revenues to address partially or on a gap basis to get over this hump, hoping that the hump clears soon?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously on off-budget cycle, when we're off the budget cycle, mid-budget, you know, our ability to raise revenue is limited. You can't, you know, obviously you can't raise property taxes mid-cycle. What we found in an opportunity for our county specifically, and I know there's other counties that potentially could take advantage of this as well, is we tapped into the sales tax on residential energy purchases. So our county started exempting those purchases from sales tax in the late 70s. The county executive, in an attempt obviously to balance this year's budget and to support us going forward, proposed and the legislature approved a temporary stay or removal of that exemption until the end of 2022. So the hope is you know, that's going to spin up, you know, roughly between 12 and 13 million in additional sales tax for the county from those purchases. So that was an area that we had available to us. I know there's probably a dozen or more counties, and I know there's other municipalities that charge sales tax on it, but from a county perspective, I think there's a dozen or so that currently levy sales tax on those purchases. But that was something that was available to us, so that's what we did. Obviously, the other way we're balancing this year is the cost cutting, which I already went through. And again, though, there's going to probably have to be some additional very difficult decisions made if there's no help and there's cuts from the state. Going into next year, you know, everything's on the table. Sales tax is sales tax. I'm not quite sure if there's an appetite or a desire for the state to allow for counties to implement a temporary increase in their local sales tax. That's always a possibility. Obviously, we have the property tax at our disposal, but, you know, the property tax cap is in place. So, I know there's some jurisdictions and municipalities that maybe that's not as big a deal to pierce that cap and vote to do that, but certainly here in our county, that's would be a very challenging proposition. So, we've had some good assessed value growth in our property values, and we could probably, grab some money on the levy and still keep tax rates flat. So that'll be on the table. Right now we've started our budget process. We actually proposed and the legislature approved and push our budget cycle timetable down the road a few months. I think you know, Dave, but we're typically one of the first counties to adopt a budget in mid-October. I went to the county executive and said, we really need some additional time this year to see how some of these things play out. He agreed, and we put an alternative timetable together, and the legislature agreed. And so now, he won't present his budget to the legislature until November 4th with an adoption in December. So that'll give us some additional time to evaluate, obviously, sales tax and, what the state ends up doing, and the feds potentially. So what we've done to start this process is, we took all of the austerity we put in place this year, the hiring freeze, not filling those vacant positions, all of the non-personnel austerity measures we put in place, and we took that and we've rolled that forward into next year as a starting point. So, close to $40 million in total reductions on an annual basis, we've rolled into what we're calling the pro forma 2021 budget. So when we pushed out the budget to the departments for them to then turn around and submit back to us their draft budgets, this year, in essence, we gave them what their budget was going to be. And it incorporated all of the austerity measures and all of those positions that we've held vacant, we unfunded at a snapshot in time. Said, okay, all these positions that are currently vacant and funded, we're going to unfund those, and we're going to incorporate that into next year's budget. It's close to 500 positions. It's unbelievable. It's going to be a challenge beyond a challenge for departments to continue to operate at the level that they've been operating at previous to the pandemic, but we really are running out of options. So the hope is with those reductions and those austerity measures that when we drop in our estimate for sales tax next year, as well as what maybe we can grab on the property tax level, along with some other big ticket items like finalizing what the mandates may cost, what the state aid may be reduced by, and some other big ticket items. Our hope is that those austerity measures and cuts that we've rolled into the 2021 budget will help us, be in a balanced state. If not, we're going to have to go into our normal mode of review and reduce. Sales tax right now, obviously we're going to have to, the budget will be something significantly less than what we budgeted this year. We're seeing right now a year-over-year reduction in this county at 10%. We have some decisions to make. That'll be one of the biggest decisions is, were we comfortable with sales tax for next year? And when we drop that into our pro forma budgets, what does that do? Does that eat up all of that $40 million that we've cut already, or is it going to require even more reductions? And where do we go for those? The paradigm has shifted. It's a very different budget approach and cycle that we're going through that we've started, and it's in essence telling departments, this is your budget for next year. Come to the realization and the conclusion that, it's going to be an austere year and we're just going to have to circle the wagons and concentrate on our core mission in these departments and, leave new initiatives, new investments, that will benefit our constituents by better service, more efficient service. We're just going to have to push some of those things off until we're more stable.
Thanks. I think in closing here, we've talked a little bit about mandates and, the state's answer right now is instead of reforming the mandate that they require counties to implement, they said they'll reduce their share. If you had one program a state program that you thought could be reformed where it would save the state and the county money and make it more sustainable going forward, do you have a specific target there where you think there's possibility for reforms that could be beneficial?
There's a number of them. I know NYSAC put out a request for ideas, and we submitted a list of items where if certain programs were tweaked in certain ways, it can certainly save on the administration of those programs. So I'm not quite sure a lot of what we submitted would necessarily reduce costs for the state, but we concentrated on items that would potentially reduce costs for us but not push them to the state. Everything from allowing us to align the staffing of jails to coincide with the population that's in the jails, allowing the counties to administer these AIM payments from our sales tax to municipalities and make determinations on the level of AIM that we would push out, potentially suspending this requirement for sales tax for distressed hospitals over the next 2 years. We're in a time right now where, you know, the hospitals to a degree have been taken care of in some of these stimulus bills out of the federal government. If there's ever a time to allow counties to make decisions about their sales tax, I think it's now. So those are some of the ideas. A lot of the ideas that we sent in were related to DSS, you know, making the current waiver on face-to-face interviews permanent. It'll allow us to continue to work with clients remotely via the phone, as opposed to having staffing an operation to interview people and meet with people face to face. So there's a number of ideas that we've come up with that are not usually new. You know, we've been at this for a while, and so a lot of the ideas are recurring, but they're certainly worth looking at to allow counties to, you know, to operate more efficiently and hopefully reduce costs at the same time.
Well, thank you so much, Steve, for your time today, and I wish you the best of luck as we move forward, and we'll continue to fight for New York State and the counties, and hopefully we can win some additional federal aid over the next month or so to really respond to this disaster and start the recovery and not delay the recovery. So thank you again.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for listening to this NYSAC podcast. Keep tuning in to hear more insightful conversations on county government throughout New York State. And feel free to reach out to our staff if there is a topic you would like to hear us discuss on the podcast.